My name's Alicia Lill, and I'm going to talk to you today about my recovery, my diamond mine, catalyst to my recovery. So, hopefully I'm okay. A diamond is a lump of coal that did well under pressure. And I think I did pretty well under pressure after you hear all the information that I'm going to give you today. So, I had an injury, but before I get to that part, I want to tell you a little bit about my life. What I do in the summertime is I know a lot of people all over the country. And I usually take one entire week to go and visit them. So this, 2014, I picked my friend Ron, who works for the Catholic Church. He is the person that sells those little missalettes and the Bibles and things like that. He lives in Cleveland, Ohio. So I went up to see Ron. But 2 weeks before that, we had our NATA convention in Indianapolis. And I met this lady. Her name is Dr. Cheryl Ferris. And we hit it off like two peas in a pod. So when I went up to see Ron, I said, you know what, I'm going to be in Cincinnati, so I can drive over to Pittsburgh to see you. She goes, well, hey, that's a pretty long distance. That's like 6 hours away. And I'm like, that's no big deal. In Texas, that's like going to dinner. So I went and saw Ron, visited with him for a while, then drove over to Pittsburgh to see Cheryl. And I told her, I said, you know, I can only stay with you one night. I have to be back in town because my friend Paul and I have tickets to go see a play. So Cheryl and I went to dinner. I got to meet her husband and her two kids. And the next morning I got up, I had some breakfast, and she was going to make me some fancy pancakes and stuff. And I'm like, no, I'll just eat some cereal. And I had some cereal with some almond milk. And I'd never had almond milk before, and it actually made me sick to my stomach. And I ended up throwing up, which is very unusual for me. And my friends know that. I used to be a big libation drinker, and I never threw that up. So I threw up that morning. You know, after a while, I cleaned myself up and everything, and I'm about noonish. I said, I got to hit the road. If I'm going to get back to Texas by Thursday, I got to get going. So I said bye to Pennsylvania, hello, West Virginia. I'm driving, and I started feeling sick again. I'm like, oh, I got to pull over. So I drove a little bit longer, and I'm like, oh, there's a rest stop up ahead. Maybe I can make it to that rest stop. So I just kept on driving, and I just got sick again. I'm like, I got to pull over now. And there was some construction going on. And they had these little signs there to tell you where the construction's going on and stuff. So I pulled up in front of, a little bit further distance from that sign, and I was going to put my car in park. And when I went to go put my car in park, I passed out, and I don't remember anything after that. I ended up hitting this sign on the right-hand side, hit it there, and it shot me over to the side of the road, through a little grassy area, down a gully, up a hill, and I ran into an auger. You know what those augers are, right? Those big drills that drill holes for telephone poles. Hit one of those little augers. And the next thing I know, there's somebody knocking on my window. And he's like, are you okay? Are you okay? And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, you just had an accident. I'm like, no, I didn't. What are you talking about? I didn't have an accident. He goes, yeah, you just had an accident. So I pull my little visor down, and I see myself and have blood all over my face. My eyeball is swelling up. And I finally got myself a little bit together, and I got out of the car, and he's like, well, do you want to go to the hospital? And, you know, most athletic trainers, if you ever ask them that question, they're going to tell you no. I can take care of myself. I don't need somebody to take care of me. I can do it. But I stood up, and I knew there was something wrong. So I said, yes, I want to go to the hospital. So before I go further than that, I want to tell you a little bit about this sign. This sign was my saving grace, because if I hadn't hit this sign, and I would have gone straight ahead to that rest stop, I probably would have killed somebody. You know, a lot of people, maybe some family that's doing some RVing and stuff, could have easily done that. Also, if I'd have hit this sign on the left-hand side, I would have got into oncoming traffic, and I probably would have been killed instantly because it's a big, big area there, big interstate that just everybody drives pretty fast through there. And I also hit that auger for a reason because the other side of that hill, there's an FBI agent unit. And if I'd have ran into that FBI agent unit, guess what would have been on me? Machine guns and everything else, and they would have probably thought I was some kind of terrorist. You know, they'd be like, oh, what are you doing there? You're some kind of terrorist. You're going to get you. You know, that's what they would have thought. But again, I hit those things for a reason. Everything happens for a reason. So they call off the ambulance to come see me and stuff, and I decided to make some phone calls before I loaded up in the ambulance. And I called my friend Paul, and I said, hey, I just had an accident in West Virginia. I don't think I'm going to make it back for the play. I don't really know what's going on, but I'll give you a call later to tell you what's going on with it. And then I called my sister, which is very unusual for me because I never call my family whenever I'm about. I travel all over the country and stuff, and I never like to call my mother and tell her, hey, I'm out here and something's going on, because she'll worry a lot. So I called my sister and I said, hey, I had an accident in West Virginia. I'm just telling you about it. I said, don't worry about coming down here to see me and stuff, and I'll get back with you when I find out what's going on. And then I called my friend Cheryl, because she was the only person I knew in the area that could actually even come out and see me, you know? I'm out in West Virginia. I don't know very many people in that area except for her. So she came. She said, I'll come down to the hospital with you and stuff. So they ended up taking me to the Bridgeport Hospital. It's a little bitty town I'm talking a little bitty town out in West Virginia. They took me in the little stretcher stuff. I'm laying in the ER, and the little policeman comes in to take my statement. You know, I'm just laying there and stuff, dealing with my eyeball swelling and everything. And we're talking about, you know, the accident and stuff. And I'm like, I really don't remember much of the accident and stuff. And we're just, you know, trying to get my fill up of what's going on with everything. And I'm like, well, I can answer your questions, sir, but I'm going to have to close my eyes for a little bit. Is that okay? And he goes, yeah, that's fine. Just, you know, try to answer your questions. So I close my eyes. And the next thing you know, there's doctors on top of me resuscitating me. And they finally got me conscious and everything. And the doctors came in and said, Miss Lil, we can't take care of you here. We have to take you over to West Virginia. So to the West Virginia hospital. So they ended up loading me in a little helicopter, a little whirly-burly, and flew me up to the West Virginia hospital. And that's great if you're going to go over to the Grand Canyon or get to tour all of West Virginia and Pittsburgh or whatever. But it's not fun when you're taken to a hospital, right? So that's how I ended up going to the West Virginia hospital and stuff. And they started doing all kinds of tests on me. And that's where they found the aneurysm. And the doctors come in, and he goes, Miss Lil, you're going to have surgery. And I'm like, well, can I go back to Dallas? And they're like, no, it's got to get done here. My accident happened on July the 9th. And I'm like, okay, so when are we going to have my surgery? He goes, on the 11th. And I'm like, okay, well, let's do it. And they said I had a 50-50 chance of surviving this surgery. So my friend Cheryl actually ended up showing up to the hospital. My friend Paul was flying in to see me after the surgery. So I don't remember much of the 10th, you know, you're in and out of consciousness and stuff, but the morning of the 11th, you know, I'm laying there in my bed and I'm waiting for the nurses to come pick me up to take me to the operating room. And the next thing you know, five doctors walk in. They're like, Miss Lil, we've had worldwide discussions about your aneurysm and we can't take care of you here. And I'm like, well, that's twice I've heard that, you know? I'm like, who's going to be able to take care of me? They said, well, you can go to San Francisco, you can go to New York, or you can go to Dallas. And I'm going, Dallas, I told you that's where I wanted to go to begin with. So they said, okay, so you've decided you want to go to Dallas. So how are you going to get there? And I said, well, can I take the medical airplane there? And they said, yes, you can. But if you have another incident, you will die instantly. And I'm like, okay. I thought about it for a little bit. And I'm like, well, can I take a commercial plane? They said, yes. But if you have another incident, you will die instantly. I'm like, yes, but I'd rather die between people I know and love than beside a doctor that can't save my life, regardless of what he's doing to me. So I'd rather fly back with my friends. So my friend Cheryl Ferris, who, again, I didn't really know that well, right? She actually bought tickets for Paul and I and herself to fly me back to Dallas. That's phenomenal, isn't it? That somebody would take their money, their time, and their effort to do that for someone that they rarely know. So we flew into American Airlines, and just the whole incident about getting in the airplane and, you know, my big gown, you know, they didn't give me my clothes back and stuff. They gave me a big, big overdressed gown and big pants that would fall half the time when I took little steps and stuff. I was in a little wheelchair when they loaded me and everything. So I get back to American Airlines, and one of the greatest things ever is that I had six of my friends waiting for me there. And I will say that Don Allen was one of them, my coworker Nick Clark and his wife, Jonathan Hancock, Cindy Trowbridge. I don't know if you guys know Cindy. They all were there to visit with me. And it was pretty late in the evening when they loaded me up. And you know how most athletic trainers are. They're first responders. They want to get going. They loaded me up in the car, and they took me to UT Southwestern. So the other thing that my friends did, Cindy Trowbridge is actually the person that did this, is she started what's called a caring bridge. You get on the internet and you can upload whatever the incident is for individuals. The other thing that was going on at the same time when I had my injury or my accident was SWATA was happening in Frisco that year. And so they kept everybody up to grade of what was going on with me and everything as far as that goes. So I went to UT Southwestern on the, I think that was the morning of the 12th, if I'm not mistaken. So then I got to meet my neurosurgeon, who is Babu Welch. He's a phenomenal guy, and if you ever have a brain injury, guess where you need to go? UT Southwestern, and you need to ask for Babu Welch. He's the best of the best. So he comes in that next morning. He goes, Miss Lil, we've had worldwide discussions about your aneurysm. And I'm expecting him to say, I can't take care of you here, because I've already heard that twice. He goes, I'm going to do a special surgery on you. He goes, it's not going to be they were going to do a brain surgery where they have to cut your skull open and stuff. But he said, no, I'm going to do a different surgery on you. And they were going to do something from the Dutch country, and they were going to wait for that to come over from Holland. But then he said, you know what, we've got a different one coming up, and I'm going to do that surgery on you. So what they had to do is go through my groin area to do that with, okay? So this is, again, what an aneurysm is. I don't really have to tell you guys much of that. So, again, it's a cerebral aneurysm. It's bulging in weak area of the artery. It supplies blood to the brain. And we need that blood, don't we? We need it to function. Well, this is what he said. He also told me that I have what's called a Super Bowl-size aneurysm. And so this is what my aneurysm looked like. And as you can see, that was a Super Bowl-size aneurysm. He's only worked on two of these in his entire 10-year career. I'm lucky to be his second. So he said, again, he's going to put a little stent up in my head. And what they did is he went through my groin to go all the way up there to work on it and stuff. But when he was up there, I actually ended up having a stroke. And this is what my fixed stent looks like. It's nice and pretty. It works really great. And I don't have to go back and see him till 2017, which is great for me. So this is the stent. This is what it looks like. So it's doing the full function that it needs to do. But I ended up having a stroke. And it shut down the entire left side of my brain when he was up there. I had a big brain bleed. And I couldn't function. I couldn't do anything. I was incapacitated for pretty much 48 hours. So they came back out, and they told Paul that I was going to be that way for the rest of my life. And he needed to start finding places where I could go and stay, hospitals or home, nursing homes or aides that would come and see me at my house or whatever. And he said, that's how I probably want to be the rest of my life. And that's kind of scary, isn't it? You know, my friends would all come up there and see me and stuff, and that's how I was going to be. It's scary stuff. Again, I didn't know about it because I was unconscious. I didn't know anything about it. So for me, it was pretty good. So, but again, it affected the whole left side of my, and this is my pretty face right here before I went into surgery. As you can see, got a nice little smile and stuff. You can see a little bruising on my eyeball there and stuff. Again, left side of my brain was injured. It affected all the right side of my body. I couldn't move or couldn't do anything at all. I couldn't speak at all. I couldn't say anything at all, honestly. And some people think that's great, that Alicia Lil can't talk anymore. But some people were like, oh my goodness, she can't speak or do anything. She can't even get up and walk. She can't do anything at all. So again, the other thing that Paul was great about is he limited the amount of people that could actually come and see me. Again, SWATA was going on at the same time when people knew that I was in UT Southwestern there in Dallas. They all wanted to come and see me and stuff, but he limited the amount of people that could actually come in to my hospital room, which was great for them and for me as well. Again, all my family came up to see me, but also my friends came out. So, and my speech was very, like I said, very limited and stuff, so I couldn't speak to them at all. But then one day, I decided I wanted to move my left foot. So my left foot started moving a little bit. And then I started raising up my right arm. And the doctor said, that looks good. She's improving every day, so she's going to be getting better and stuff. So then what they ended up doing is I could actually move and start actually getting up and starting to stand. So they had to get physical therapists in there to help me out and stuff. The other thing I also had an issue with was my optic nerve, my left eyeball. The aneurysm was sitting in my parietal lobe, but it was also sitting on my optic nerve. So it shut down that left eye. So I could see him right there, nice and beautiful guy, how's it going? And I could also see that projector over there and see double of those. So this eyeball was over here on this side, and I could see two things out of that eye. So I also had to, get that taken care of. And I injured my right arm, my right leg, and my right hip, and my right ankle. And this is my... so you guys see that, my little beautiful face right there. I had to wear a patch over this eyeball in order to function. Because you have to do exercises for your eye as well, right? Just because something's injured doesn't mean you're not going to rehab it to make it better. So I had to have a little patch on. So I went to UT Southwestern and had to come in and give me speech therapy. Again, I was there from July 11th to the 28th. So my speech therapist, they'd come in and they would put a book out in front of me and they say, what's this guy doing? And, you know, I'd look at it and all I could say was yep, yep. Honestly, that's the only word I could ever say was yep, 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 yep. You want to fly a kite? Yep, yep. You want to go on a bike ride? Yep, yep. That's the only word. And no, no. I could say no, no. Somebody asked me a question one time and I had no, no. I remember the question that they asked me was, I remember laying in the hospital and my brothers and sisters were all in the front of the bed and my doctor was right there beside me and he goes, well, you've gotten a little bit better and stuff and you can probably go back to Deleon and stay with your family. And I'm like, nope, 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 nope. Because I didn't want to go stay with my family. You know, I didn't want to be in that situation where I couldn't be. I'm an independent woman and anybody who knows me knows that I'm an independent woman. I want to be able to take care of myself. But that was my first thing I remember is nope, nope. So, and then my speech therapist, they would have to come in and say, okay, this guy is on a, he's on a telephone, he's got a telephone there. And they have to tell me that that's what that guy's doing. Or they'd put a card down. They said, what is this thing right here? And I'd say, that's a chicken. And they're like, no, that's not a chicken, that's a duck. Well, no, that's a chicken. No, that's a duck. And they have to educate you again, cognitively. You have to go through that education to relearn things. So, and again, they also had to teach me how to walk. So one day, again, I had great friends that came to see me every day, and this was Melissa Harrington's day to come up and visit with me. And she's there, and a physical therapist comes in to give me a walk. And I'm like, well, can she take me? She's my biscuit. And she's like, no, I'm your physical therapist. I have to be the one to walk you. But she's my biscuit. How come she can't take me? I'm like, no, I'm your therapist. I have to be the one to walk you. But she's my biscuit. And I was getting really frustrated with her because, you know, Melissa's an athletic trainer. And I thought that's what I was saying. I thought I was saying, she's my athletic trainer. Why can't she walk me? But in my head, I was saying biscuit. And again, I couldn't connect those words together. So that's what I call her. She's my biscuit and her husband, Charlie, is her gravy. So, so again, that, and then so this is a recovery. They came back out and they taught Paul that in order for me to be able to be back functioning, not as an athletic trainer, but as a person, this is what I would have to go to. I'd have to have this much recovery done for me. So he went out and he did some research on clinics around the area, and he found one that's called Pate Rehabilitation Center. This is a lot of people that have to see you by day to day, right? So I actually, to be able to get all of the services would cost me more than like $800 or more every day to get that, okay, to be able to be back at full functioning. Not be back as a person that can go out and do their job, but just to be able to back out and function, to be able to speak to somebody, to be able to actually function with my arms, to be able to write, to be able to do all those little bitty simple things that we take for granted every day, right? This morning when you got up to brush your teeth, how easy was that? You just picked up the toothpaste, you brushed, put it on your toothbrush, and you got to work, right? But I couldn't do that. I couldn't brush my hair. I couldn't lift, you know, I can do lots of different things. Those little bitty things that we take for granted every day. So he actually found this clinic called Pate Rehabilitation Clinic. And it's out in Anna, which is only 15 miles away from where I live, which is very unusual. And again, I had no idea that that place was there. So it's like a little jewel out in the middle of nowhere. So I actually stayed at Pate Rehabilitation Center from July the 28th through January the 16th. And I had to go through all these different functioning drills. So it's the FIT program, the TRILS program, the ILS, and I did day rehab, and then I got day rehab was October the 10th. So we'll go through those little step by step. So this is where I lived at. It's like going back to college, you know? We have one more. It's like going back to college. You know, you get to move in a little dorm room. I remember the little Pate Rehabilitation Clinic van came by the hospital and picked me up. And I couldn't see out of my eye, obviously. I couldn't handle anything over the lights and stuff bothered my eyeballs. So they actually put a little washcloth over my eye. And I remember getting in the van and driving and driving and driving and driving. And I'm like, well, when are we ever going to get there? And we finally got to Pate, and I got out, and they're like, oh, this is where you're going to be living now. You know, and again, I had to move into that. And, but also my friend Paul came to the clinic as well and got me all settled up in my room and everything, got me going. So I had to start doing my rehab the next day right away. So this is what the rehab clinic looks like. What's it look like to you guys? Like an athletic training room, right? And what do I know? I know athletic training rooms, and I know how to function in athletic training rooms. And I think that was one of the biggest benefits for me to recover greatly. So again, for FIT, I went from August the 4th all the way through, I think, the middle of the last end of August for that. I had to go to an occupational therapist. That was my first place I had to go. And again, they have to teach you simple things to do. But the first thing I remember going to the PT clinic, and they put me on an exercise bike. And I should know how to ride an exercise bike, right? Because I'm an athletic trainer. But I didn't. So they put me on the exercise bike, and they said, okay, you're going to put your feet in here and your feet in there, and you got to start pedaling it. So I couldn't do it right away to begin with. And then the next day I got on it again, I was able to actually get the full circle going through. And once I learned how to ride the bike, that's all I wanted to do. I didn't want to do anything else in the clinic or do anything else anywhere else. I wanted to be on that bike, and that's all I wanted to do. So every day I'd get up and I'd go in there and I said, I want to ride the bike. And they're like, no, you have occupational therapy today. I'm like, no, I want to ride the bike. So they finally got in together and they said, okay, you can come in here and ride the bike for 30 minutes and then you go to occupational therapy. Then you have to come back out here and you do your other stuff, okay? So again, biking for me was what I want, my phenomenon. That's all I wanted to do. So this is what I had to do in my fit recovery. Again, what do those look like? Those are things that you're doing with your athletes, right, in your athletic training room. But for me, they had to teach me how to balance, how to catch, how to do cognitive skills. The one down at the bottom is, her name is Cheryl. I call her my Superman because she's the person that taught me how to walk fully, how to walk up steps, how to do functional training, how to catch things, how to be able to do functional training with my eyeballs, all those little bit of simple things that we do for our patients day to day, right? And this is the other one is Kim. She's my cognitive therapist who has to show me how to actually turn on a computer, how to make the computer work, and then move forward on those. And once they teach you something, you can retain it in your brain, then you're better off the next day. And it's just a series of every day they're teaching you these simple things. And then I was only in that one for, I was supposed to be there for 4 weeks, but they actually, they said, you're progressing so quickly that we're going to move you on to the next section, which is the trills. So they moved me up to the big house. This is a West house is what this is. And that means that I was independent because I was living in the trail section. Guess what? I had to have a nurse with me every day. There was always a nurse. Let me back up a little bit. There was always a nurse right outside of my bedroom. When I had to go take a bath, guess what? There was a nurse in there. When I had to go to the bathroom, guess what? There was a nurse in there. When I had to go walk somewhere, there was a nurse with me. I'm an independent woman, and I did not want a nurse with me everywhere I went. So I progressed really quickly so that I could move up to the next section, which is the West House, the hilltop area, where I could live by myself. So you have your own little, like another expanded dorm room. You have a queen-size bed. You have a washer and dryer. You have your own shower by yourself. So you have all these things, and you're more independent. Because when I was down at the lower level, they had to wash my clothes for me. They had to do all those little bitty simple things. And I did not like that one bit. So when I went to the paid rehabilitation, as you can see, there's a lot of rehab that you have to go through, right? You start off at 9 o'clock in the morning, and you don't end till 3-something in the afternoon. And you're going constantly all day long in order to recover. So this is my Trills recovery. This is a PT aide that helped out, and she actually is a person who helped my hand. I couldn't even open this hand up at all. I couldn't squeeze anything. I couldn't do anything with this arm. She started doing some massage therapy on me, and I could actually extend it and function it. And I still have issues with that hand, as you can see. My movement's still a little slow. It still doesn't go as well as I'd like it to go. But if that's my only issue, I'm okay with that, you know? There could be a lot of other issues with me. But that's the only issue I have, I'm fine with it. And then this is my speech therapist. Her name is Penny. I call her Penny Money because she's the person that had to teach me how to read. Again, I have what's called aphexia. It's where you repeat words all the time. So if I was reading a book and I'd say, okay, Johnny's going up the hill and he's going to jump rope. Johnny's going. And I would repeat those words all the time. But I'm a big reader. Those people who know me know that I love to read. And my friend Sean Lindsay, he used to be the AT at Texas Tech. A lot of people always send me gifts and cards and things like that. Sean sent me this book for me to start reading and stuff once I could actually start reading. It's called The Last Lecture. So that's what I brought up to Penny and said, I'd like to read this book. And that's what we started reading with the last lecture book stuff. And I recovered pretty quickly with that. And then this is Lynette. She had to teach me how to put different words in, synonyms. Because if I said something's difficult, something's hard, something's undoable, again, synonyms, be able to work on those words that you can put in that. Because when you get excited and you're speaking and stuff and you lose words, you ought to be able to stick something else in, right, in order to make it work and be able to communicate to that individual. And then, so this is ILS. I had to go bike in the gym and do all those other things. But this is independent living, okay? This is when I got to go to back home at my house and stuff and do all my therapy at school or at the Pate Rehab Center. The little van would come by. It's like going back to middle school. Little van would come by. I'd be sitting on my front porch waiting for him. I'd load the van, He'd take me to the pain rehab clinic. I'd do all these exercises, and at the end of the day, he'd load me back up in the van and drop me back off at my house. But what was great about that is I got to live by myself in my own house. And that's the other thing, Paul and I, you know, Paul is a fantastic man. If none of you guys have ever got to meet him, you need to. You need to reach out and visit with him, because he's a phenomenal man. I love him to death. You know, one day he came, he's the only person I could actually go with. You know, they have restrictions on the individuals that can come and see you. When I was in the, at the West House, they could come and visit with you, but they couldn't load you up in their car and take you anywhere. But Paul could. So Paul came and picked me up one day. We went to Mass, and then we went to go eat. And he goes, Alicia, we need to start talking about, are you going to move into a, do you want to move into a apartment or to a home health center that can help you recuperate every day, and then you can get back into your home? And I'm like, no, I want to be fully functioning. I have a 3-bedroom house. I said, I want to live in my own house, and I want to be back as the athletic trainer at McKinney North. And that's what I'm going to work for every day to be able to accomplish. So, and after that, he left it alone. It never came up as an issue, because that's what I want to do. I want to live alone by myself and be able to take care of myself. So this is my ILS recovery. I think you guys maybe played this game when you're little kids. It's a perfection game. We have to put different obstacles in a program that you push down. It pops up and it scares you to death. And I still do it. It still scares me to death. It's a funny thing. And then that is Ann. She's my other speech therapist. And then that down at the bottom is my occupational therapist. Again, they have to teach you how to do things just for your daily living, but also what you're going to be doing at your work setting. So I had to tape ankles, and I used to be a pretty fast ankle taper. I could probably tape 43 seconds, get an ankle tape job done. When I was learning how to retape ankles, I think that one almost took me like 2 minutes and 30 seconds to get completed. That's a long time to tape an ankle, isn't it? My freshman kids do it faster than that. But again, you have to work on it every day to get better at it. And I also had to learn how to cook. Again, you can't go live in your own home unless you teach them that you can actually cook. So they have to walk. They have a little kitchenette there, and you have to go through, and you have to walk and see, hey, there's some water on the floor. I need to clean that up. This pan is sticking out. I need to reverse it over. This light's still on. I got to turn it off. And you got to recuperate all those things and fix it all up for them. But I cooked brownies the first day, and they really liked them. They liked most of my cooking. I made pecan pies for them and egg casseroles and you name it. I was cooking it up. This is my recovery as well. Getting in the pool was fantastic. You usually have to have a physical therapist in the pool with you, but my recovery, I was doing so great that I was the only person they would actually let get in the pool by themselves. Obviously, my physical therapist had to be sitting outside on the deck, but I could be in there by myself and jumping. And I'm talking, I would jump and jump and jump and jump, and I probably spent 45 minutes to 60 minutes in the pool jumping in and doing my rehab in that, plus the other exercises I would do as well. This is Christy. She's not working there anymore. Now she went to Baylor. She's my physical therapist, and she actually asked me to do yoga. So I actually, I got to do yoga, which is unusual for me. If you ask my friends, I'm like, there's no way you did yoga. But I did, because the reason she wanted me to do that is because for relaxation and for breathing. Like whenever she was doing stretches on me or I was doing exercises, I would hold my breath a lot. She goes, you need to be breathing a little bit better. So I started doing yoga, and I'm pretty good at it. I actually have been not doing it as well, but I think I'm pretty good at it still. So let's see if I can do my yoga pose. That's not bad. I got to do better than that. You know, if people know me, they know I have to do the best that I can do. That's got to be better. Pretty good. Pretty good. And then I also had to learn how to walk with a backpack on me. And everybody's like, why do you need to have a backpack on you? I'm like, well, I work at my multi-purpose room is here, and my high school is a pretty good distance away, and I carry a backpack. I have my computer in there. I have my packages for handouts and all that stuff, and I have to have a backpack with me. So I had to get a backpack on me to start walking with. And I also like to do backward walking and sideward walking, and they were always like, no, you can't do those things. I'm like, why not? I have to teach my kids how to do it. How come I can't do it myself in order to be able to teach them once I get back into doing athletic training? So these are some of the exercises I do. I got to meet a lot of friends. I'm still friends with quite a bit of them. But the other thing that I noticed a lot about my friends is they didn't have a lot of people coming and visiting them. You know, I was very fortunate that I did. I'm a very blessed lady to have friends who reached out to see me, that came up and saw me at the clinic. They came up and saw me at the hospital. Very, very lucky lady. So then I got to go back to work. So this is our playoff game. for soccer. I think the second playoff game. So my back to work. It was on January 20th. So I got released from Pate Rehabilitation Center on January the 16th. And I told Paul, I said, I'd like to take an entire week off so I can just kind of recuperate in my own house and stuff. He goes, no, you got to go back to work as soon as you can. So I went back to work on January the 20th. So one of the other things that was fantastic about my school district is my ADs and my principals, they always came up to see me when I was in the hospital, when I was at rehabilitation clinic. They always came up to see me. And they didn't come up to see me to say, hey, when are you going to come back to work? We need you back in the athletic training room. They just came up to see me to see how I was doing, how I was recovering. And that was phenomenal for somebody to be able to do that for you, you know? Because a lot of times when people are injured, their principals or their ADs, they're like, okay, you either come back by this date or you're going to be fired and we're going to replace you by that time, you know? But I was very lucky that they didn't do that. And they also got to let me restrict my time that I had to be in that. Normally, I had to be at school at 6:30 to get going or 6 and start treatment at 6:30. And we usually worked about 6:30 in the afternoon, or if you have basketball games or soccer games, you're working until 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening, right? And that's what we athletic trainers know. Those are our time frames. But they actually let me restrict my time from 7:30 to 2:30. And then I didn't have to teach for 2 whole weeks. I still remember the first day I was back, I went to go to the front office and stuff, and I thought I was back to my normal self, you know, go back through the hallways and everything, and I couldn't handle it. It was too much, it's chaotic, so much clustering and stuff. But I didn't have to teach for the whole 2 weeks to begin with. And then, I got to work in the athletic training room. And for me, walking in the athletic training room is like switching a light. I know what I'm doing there, and for me, it's easy. You know, I find it easy, an athletic trainer, it's easy for me. And I was actually able to incorporate all those, that knowledge into my rehab clinic as well, my rehab treatment when I was at Pate. I had a contract AT too. They actually hired 3 contract ATs while I was gone, but I had a contract AT with me those 2 weeks that I was there. You see me repeat my word just now? I catch it. When I repeat it, I make sure that I catch it when I do it, because I have to make sure that I correct myself. Otherwise, I'll continue to do that all the time, right? So I have to continue to correct myself. But they had a contract trainer with me, so I would go to my basketball games to cover, and he would be right there with me. He'd be in the athletic training room with me as well if I needed help with anything. So that was very nice and very comforting as well. I didn't have any games the first week, but then my ADs went to the HR department, and they said, you know what, her job says that she has to do athletic training work and also do game coverage. So they said, yeah, you have to go work a game, but you only have to go work one game, and you can go home. So I only had to go in and work one girls' basketball game, and I got to go home by, I think, 7:30, because that's big. You know, when you're somebody who's recovering from a stroke, you're still recovering even after the fact. Even after your neurosurgeon releases you, you're still recovering. So, and then, again, one game once a week, and then I had to work full-time after that. That was from 6 to 6:30 in the p.m., Well, after that, my coworker ended up having a deep vein thrombosis in his lower leg, and he sat out. He got missing for 3 whole weeks of work. And my AD came in and said, hey, do you want to hire a contract to work with you? And I'm like, no, I don't. I don't need a contract worker to work with me. I want to do this by myself, and I want to prove to everybody that I am capable of doing athletic training and working fully like I did before. So I actually did that for 3 whole weeks by myself. And it is a lot of work to begin with, but you know what? For me, athletic training is fun. It's fun to do every day. And by that time, it was 3 weeks afterwards. By that time, I was ready to go, do it all at one time. So what are my challenges, or what were my challenges? Again, I still have problems with some of these things, slow movements, especially when I get tired. My movements are slow. The lots of students, even now going down the hallways, lots of students, for any of you guys, probably all those students are a big mess, right, having to walk through and stuff. Get out of the way. But I learned to go the back way through the where there's not very many kids going through the hallways and stuff. And I still use those same motions and stuff. Loud noises. I couldn't handle really loud noises. Now I can handle a whistle blowing in my ear, and it doesn't bother me whatsoever. But before, I couldn't handle any of those loud noises and stuff. It was a big problem with that. And then hall congestions. Unable to show the rehab. Like, even now, I can't do a lot of the rehab activities that I normally would do and show the kids. Even now, I have issues with those. But I'm really good at explaining how to do those rehab exercises, how you want to jump, how you want to jump forward or backwards and stuff, and do it perfectly well with them. And I can actually show some of those things. And writing is still my biggest issue. This hand is still my biggest issue. But you know what? I can work on computers, right? I can write things on my computers. The other thing I can also use is my left hand. And again, everything happens for a reason, right? And I'm a full believer of that. Because when I was getting my master's degree in 98, I lived with three men who were all left-handed people. And guess what? Guess who wanted to be a lefty too? This lady right here. So I said, I'm going to start being a lefty. So I started eating left-handed. I started using my mouse left-handed. I started writing left-handed. So guess what? When this hand wouldn't work at all, what? Guess what hand I use? My left hand. And now when people come and see me, they said, oh, you're a lefty. I'm like, nope, I'm not a lefty. I'm a righty. But I'm actually ambidextrous. I can use both hands and stuff. I want to be like Jesse DeLee. Anybody see Jesse DeLee? He'll write on the board this way, and then he'll swap over and go that way. He'll write this way and go over that way. If you've never seen Jesse DeLee write, you need to. So again, I had a lot of support. I had support from middle school, McKinney North. One of my parents got all my athletes to come up, and they did this big old poster. They signed it and said, you know, fight like a dog. And they took a picture of it, and they actually brought this picture and a blanket up to the hospital when I was in the hospital with me. They also gave me this little card. My principal, like I said, would come up and see me all the time. And this is actually a card made by one of my former students, who is now our art director. And they filled it out and has all the signatures from all the teachers, you know, wishing me well and stuff. And then I had a lot of friend support as well. Like I said, everybody would send me cards, send me packages, things like that. I know that Don Allen would send me probably a card once a week or once every 2 weeks and stuff. So a lot of friend support. They also, Bane Ward and his wife made me this little blanket. They decided they wanted to stitch all the t-shirts that were liked and stuff. They made me this big blanket. I actually got that after I was recovered. And then this nice little, you know, my friends, the Team Lil t-shirt. So that's the other thing that my friends did. I think it was Melissa Harrington that did it. They decided they wanted to help me raise money for my medical funds. So they made these Team Lil t-shirts that they were selling and stuff to get into my medical fund. So my rocks, Paul Krajewicz, again, I couldn't function without Paul. He was with me night and day all the way through when I got my accident, all the way to my recovery. You know, he was also the person that sat through all my family meetings. You know, when you have rehab, you have to have family meetings with your physical therapist and your doctors and stuff. He was there with every one of those and bringing up, okay, what's going on with her eye? How is she functioning with that? Can she go to a different eye doctor? I had issues with this right arm here. They were doing therapy on me and stuff, and I'm like, it's not getting better. Can I make my own orthopedic exam and stuff like that? But Paul was always with me right there all the way. He's the one that would, keep people from coming to the hospital to see me. He's the person that took care of my house, paid my bills. You know, you have to think about all those little things that you have to do when you're not functioning yourself. So you have to have somebody else to be able to care for you. And most of you guys have husbands or wives that will do that. You know what? I'm lucky to have a best friend that did that for me. Cheryl Ferris, again, I just barely knew Cheryl, but she was able to buy our tickets back to Dallas. She was with me the entire time I was getting my recovery. And again, she's a fantastic woman. And then this man here, Steve Simpson. I can't tell you how much I love Steve Simpson. He's the one that got me going in athletic training. But he would also take time, and Stephenville is a pretty good distance from Anna. He would get in his truck, and he would drive all the way to Dallas to see me at the hospital, or he would come up to Pate Rehabilitation Center just to say hi. He'd load me up and take me to go get a milkshake or drive me around and stuff. How many people would do that for you? Taking time from their busy schedules to do that for you. I did, my friends, the people that had loved me so much, and I love them. But right here, Steve actually came to my, I always have a tamale Christmas, margarita tamale party every Christmas time. And a lot of people came in for that one that year. And Steve came up and he goes, hey, I had to come see you for your party and stuff. He goes, I'm like, well, thank you so much for coming and stuff. He goes, I have this card for you for my kids, it's from his athletic training students. And I opened it up and stuff and they're all wishing me well and stuff. And then he goes, and we have this for you too. And he gave me a check. Again, I told you that it cost me $800 a day to get my therapy, right, at Pate. He gave me the check for $6,000. How many people would do that for you? So what Tarleton State did is they did a lunch for Lil. And you could go and buy your lunch for me with lunch from Tarleton to donate to my medical funds and stuff. He gave me $6,000 to pay. And that paid for pretty much all of my rehab center when I was there. So I was able to meet, you guys know what a pyramid of success, John Wooden came up with this pyramid of success, and I took some of his information for this talk. I got to meet John Wooden before he passed away, and it was really phenomenal to get to do that. So faith, you have to have faith. It's taking the first step, even when you don't see the whole staircase. I'm going to get close so I can read it off that. It's perseverance. Again, you can only be as strong as you allow yourself to be. Never get discouraged, never give up, because consistency and dedication is the key to success. And then motivation. You have to strive to be the best no matter how simple the task is. Whether it's brushing your teeth, whether it's combing your hair, whether it's taking 5 steps, all those little things. You have to have motivation to be able to succeed. And hope. You never give up hope. A strong mind always hopes and always has cause to hope. My inspirations is God. It's a blessing to be alive. And it should be a blessing to be alive for each and every one of us. When you wake up in the morning, you should take a deep breath and say, hey, God, I'm here. I'm awake. I love you to death. And what do you want me to do for you today? I'm thankful. I'm thankful for all the people that came to see me, that sent me notes. But I'm also thankful for my physical therapist, my doctors, all the way down to the janitor. Everybody has a input in your life, in your recovery, okay? And they have to encourage you to be better with everything. All the way down from the paramedics, again, every little bit counts. Everybody's helping you. Trust. You have to trust your caregivers, but you also have to trust yourself. You know, you have to believe they know what they're doing for you, but you also have to know that you have to trust yourself as well with them. And patience, again, and that's big. I don't know if any of you guys have ever had a stroke victim in your life, but you have to have patience. You have to have patience for yourself, and they have to have patience with you, okay? You can't walk before you can run. You have to take it one day at a time. Every day is a new day. And then your life, it's precious and delicate. Live it to the fullest no matter what the restrictions or limitations, okay? So this is one of my favorite quotes, the power of attitude. Our lives are not determined by what happens to us, but how we react to what happens. Not by what life brings to us, but what the attitude would bring to life. A positive attitude causes a chain reaction of positive thoughts, events, and outcomes. It is a catalyst, a spark that creates extraordinary results. So again, God has a plan for me. I don't know what it is. I don't know what I'm going to fulfill for him. But he has a plan for me. He has a plan for each and every one of us. And I'm going to continue to strive to do my best for him each and every day. You know, again, I could have easily lost my life back in July the 9th. I could have easily not hit that sign, you know. That sign was my saving grace. There are a lot of saving graces in my life. And I'm really lucky. And I'm going to, again, continue to strive to do my best with every little thing that I can do. The NATA did a little write-up for me in 2015. I don't know if you guys ever saw that thing. And they did a nice little write-up on that as well. And I got a lot of support from not only media, but also from my friends. The WFAA came out and did a little segment on me as well. And it's not about me. It's about stroke victims. It's about rehabilitation for stroke victims and people with aneurysms, people with traumatic brain injuries. You have to have patience with those individuals. You have to help them work through whatever difficulties they have, because it is important to them, to me, to us. Thank you so much for your time.